Tonight we are looking at this question. What would your life look like if you had no fear in it? Just think about that for a moment. What would you do with your life if the presence of fear was no longer a reality for you? What would you do? Like, what courageous, crazy thing would you do if you weren't afraid to do it anymore? If that was not present in your life anymore? A number of us heard a guy called Andrew White, Canon Andrew White, who's sometimes called the Vicar of Baghdad. Anyone, just wave at me if you've heard of Andrew White. He was here a number of months ago speaking here, and he is an Anglican vicar in Baghdad in Iraq. He's been there right throughout the kind of Saddam Hussein era, leads a church. And he came and recounted some of his stories of what it's like to be a Christian minister in the middle of Baghdad in Iraq. And let me tell you, he had some amazing stories. This is a guy who is seeing incredible move of the Spirit where he is in Iraq. And yet the reality for him is that he lives right on the doorstep of fear every single day. And he describes how his life is one of, he's been hijacked many times. He's been kidnapped many times. He said he's been locked in small rooms with torture implements many times. He's been shot at. He's been threatened. He's under constant death threat. He has 35 security guards who look after him round the clock. Plus he suffers from MS, which he's had since the age of 33. And this is what he said. He said, when the worst that someone can do is kill you, but you're no longer afraid of dying, you become a very dangerous man. I love that. And he said, the ethos of my life is don't give in whatever anyone says. I love that. And he's discovered something of this journey of moving free from a life that is plagued by fear. And what he is discovering is that he is walking in a sustained move of the miraculous power of God in his life, because actually he's learning how to deal with fear in his own heart. And we are starting this series called Sustainable Power, which is our look at how we can ignite the church without blowing her up, okay? Because the church is meant to be a hothouse for the power of God. But if you've been a Christian for any length of time, you'll know that sometimes the presence and the power of God can produce issues which can actually blow the church up if you're not ready for them. Which is why Jesus used this analogy. He said, listen, if you want to have new wine poured out, you need to pour your new wine into a new wineskin. Because otherwise, what happens if you pour new wine into an old wineskin, the wineskin will burst and you'll lose the wine. The analogy is a clear one. Jesus is saying, if you want the miraculous power of God to rest and remain in you as a community, as an individual, over decades and decades and decades, you've got to look after the culture of your heart. You've got to look after the culture of your church. You've got to look after the culture of your family. You've got to look after the wineskin, the environment in which the power of God is housed. And that's why Jesus actually is the perfect model of what this looks like. He, in a literal sense, was the perfect wineskin for the new wine of heaven. Because he demonstrates to us what it looks like to live a naturally sustained, supernatural life where everyone got more than they bargained for. And you love that about Jesus. You know, you just kind of read those stories of men and women encountering Jesus and they always got more than they asked for. Don't you long for a day when that is people's experience when they come into contact with you? That they get more than they bargain for. I mean, I love the story a number of months ago, and a lady pulled up outside in her car in an evening meeting. She came with a particular illness, and she came because she thought, if I get to church, maybe God will heal me. And so she came up in her car, got out of her car, came into the foyer area, found someone, I think it was Nick, my friend, and said, listen, can you pray for me? Prays for her in the foyer, power of God hits her body, she gets healed instantly, and then she goes back out into her car, gets her kids, and drives home. I mean, isn't that fantastic? But actually, that's what happened all the time when people encountered Jesus. They got more than they asked for. And he is the model of what a supernaturally sustained life looks like. And so we are looking at this question of how can we have a sustainable culture in which the presence of God is pleased to rest and remain, not just for one generation, but for many successive generations to come. And so we are looking particularly tonight at this issue of fear, because if you want to build a sustainable culture of the miraculous, one of the big obstacles that you and I are going to have to come face to face with is how can I get free from my fear? Just nudge someone and say, that doesn't apply to me at all, but this is going to speak to you a lot. So let's just kind of look at this subject a little bit together. How can we move from fear to a place of faith? So firstly, fear defined. Fear defined. I think it wouldn't take a genius to do an appeal right now and all of us would respond to having fears of various sorts in our life. Now, you might kind of mask it with a slightly more posh word like anxiety or worry, but really it's fear. Really it's fear. And all of us actually carry fears of various things to different degrees, whether it's fear of poverty, fear of rejection, fear of loneliness, fear of being left out, fear of cancer, fear of a particular type of illness, fear of this eventuality happening to you. Whatever it is, actually all of us live, really, if we're honest, under this mask of fear that affects the way in which we live. A man called E. Stanley Jones said this, that fear is like sand in the machinery of your life. Which is a brilliant and vivid description, actually, of what fear does to us, isn't it? Because what fear does is it stops you doing what you would otherwise do. It stops you doing the right thing. It stops you saying yes to God. That's what fear does. It's like sand in the machinery of our lives. And I know personally for me, one of my big fears that I have had to face and still have to face is a fear of rejection. I know for me that I would probably put that at the top of my list of the fears that I have had to do battle with through the years. And I know for me, really, the root of that was just chronic bullying at school that really left its mark in my life. And although I grew up in a very affirming Christian home and my mum and dad were very encouraging and loved me well, yet I, through many years, experienced chronic bullying at school of various different shapes and kinds. And it left me actually with a chronic fear of not being accepted, of being left out, of being different, of being pushed to the edge. And in fact, my very first angelic encounter was during a bullying episode. And I remember I was about 8 or 9 years old. I was at school and it was playtime and I was out on the school field. And for some reason, I was on my own. My other friends had kind of left me at this particular moment. I was standing on my own right at the edge of the school field. And suddenly these 7 or 8 guys from 2 years above me surrounded me in a semicircle, pointed at me and said, "We're now going to beat you up." And I remember just literally feeling like petrified, like I wanted to wet myself on the spot. But then something amazing happened. This huge kid in a school uniform walked into the semicircle, stood in front of me and these 7 or 8 other kids, pointed at them and said, "If you lay one finger on him, I'm going to have every single one of you." And they all went. The whole crowd dispersed. And I was a relieved little boy. And here was the amazing thing. He then turned to me and said, "Are you all right?" I was like, "Yeah, thank you so much." And then I never, ever saw him again. I mean, it's like he just disappeared off the face of the planet. Isn't that amazing? But here's the reality. There wasn't always an angel that came to the rescue. Actually, I did have to walk through facing rejection at numbers of different points. And for me, this has been one of the big fears I've had to face. And, you know, it has different effects in your life. I realized as I look back, you know, I was very good at blending into different groups because I was afraid of being rejected. I wanted to be accepted. So I was in with the geeks and the boffins, okay? So I did my homework well, like a good boy. Not because I really wanted good grades, but because I wanted to be included. Or, you know, the school cricket team. I wanted to be in the school cricket team because I wanted to be accepted and included. I didn't want to be rejected. I remember my first game for the cricket team, top scoring. And it was an amazing feeling. I thought, yes, I'm accepted. Second game, out, first ball, 0, golden duck. And my dad came to watch that particular day. And I just remember feeling devastated. Why? Not because of the score, but because I thought, what if they reject me because I've not done well? And this is what fear does in our life. And actually, if we don't deal with this kind of junk, it just continues and perpetuates in our life into all the other arenas of your life as you grow up. And for me, it's been like literally Shrek the Ogre of God peeling off the onion layers of fear in my life and dealing with my fear of rejection through the years. And I still have a ways to go. So here's the question. What fears are you dealing with? What is the junk in here that's stopping the flow of God's miraculous kingdom flow through you? What are the fears that are stopping you say yes to God? And there'll be different things for different ones of us. What then is happening when we get afraid? What's actually going on? Well, I would suggest to you that this is what's happening when we get fearful about these different things. What really happens when we get fearful is this. Fear is placing our faith in the wrong reality. That's what fear is. If you want a definition of fear, this is my definition of fear. It's you placing your faith in the wrong reality. It's trust that is misapplied. And I'll tell you a story to illustrate what I mean. And it's the story of Jesus' disciples who are one day in a boat with Jesus. They are crossing the Sea of Galilee. And these guys are fishermen. They are used to the sea. They're used to the waves. They're used to the wind. They're used to storms. And yet we read in the gospel account in Matthew chapter 8 that a massive storm hits their boat. Jesus is in the boat, but he's fast asleep. And they understand because of their experience that this is a storm that could seriously damage their health. In fact, it could kill them. And this is what we read in Matthew 8:25. It says, the disciples went and woke Jesus saying, Lord, save us. We're going to drown. He replied, you have little faith. Why are you so afraid? We thought that might be a little bit harsh. Why are you so afraid? And then Jesus got up. He rebuked the wind and the waves, and it was completely calm. And here is what's happening in this moment as the disciples are getting afraid. They are placing their trust in the less weighty of two realities. Because there are two things going on in this particular story. Number one, there's the size of the waves. There is the storm. That is a big reality right there. This stuff is happening. This is not make-believe. This is really difficult. This really could kill us, actually. And so they are placing their trust in that version of reality. But the other version of reality is this. Jesus is in the boat. So what's the worst that can happen? Jesus is there with them. And their experience would have said, Jesus is big enough and powerful enough to save us. And what happens when we get fearful is we place our faith in the less weighty of two realities. Because you always have a choice what to believe. See, for me, when I'm facing my fear of rejection, still today, I have a choice in certain circumstances. Which reality am I going to choose to put my faith in? That if I don't do well, then I'm somehow rejected? Or actually, I'm fully accepted in Christ and I'm utterly secure forever? Which version of reality am I going to place my trust in? And that's what's happening when we get fearful. Fear is faith misapplied. And interestingly, in this story, you notice that Jesus doesn't ignore the reality of the waves. And neither does Jesus ignore the reality of the pain and the difficulty and the trials that you walk through. He doesn't ignore them. He doesn't just say, well, just ignore the waves and hope they go away. That's not what Jesus does. Actually, he is able to deal with the waves because internally he is at peace. And if you want to deal with external storms, you need to first learn to deal with your internal storms because you always export the nature of the reality that you're most aware of. And for Jesus, he is utterly at peace in here, which is why he can speak peace out here. And so he doesn't ignore the facts. And, you know, some people say, well, faith is just believe. I mean, just press on anyway. Well, no, actually, that's not faith. For example, this is what it says about Abraham in Romans chapter 4. It says, Abraham faced the fact that his body was as good as dead. That's called facing the facts. That's called facing the waves, facing the storm, facing the size of the obstacle, facing your fears. Abraham faced the fact that his body was as good as dead, yet was strengthened in his faith as he gave glory to God, being fully persuaded that God had power to do what he had promised. And that's faith right there. Is choosing to place your faith in the greater of two realities. God is big enough to do this. God is big enough to bring about what he has promised. Recently, Rick Warren, who many of we will know as one of the most influential Christian leaders of this century, he, in the last month, tragically lost his son who committed suicide. His son had suffered with mental health issues for many, many years and tragically took his own life in the last month or so. And this is what Rick Warren tweeted. He said, oysters tenaciously attack to a rock larger than themselves, because then no punishing wave or violent storm can ever sweep them away. And there is a guy who's learning how to put his faith in the greater of two realities. He's not ignoring the pain of one, but he's saying, Father, I'm trusting that you are big enough to help me. And that's what the psalmist says, Psalm 46. God is an ever-present help in times of trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, even though the earth give way and the mountains fall into the heart of the sea. See, what fear does is it focuses on something. What faith does is it focuses on someone. It's all about who's your daddy. Who's your daddy? So what about the effects of fear on culture? Because if we're trying to build this culture of the sustained miraculous power of God, fear actually has a massive effect on trying to build that kind of culture, because quite simply, without faith, nothing will happen. If we don't actually learn to deal with fear, the rock of fear in our heart, nothing will ever happen. And so this is a crucial issue if we want to build this kind of a culture. So let's just look at a few of the effects of fear on our culture as a church. What about on generosity? Well, I mean, fear has a massive effect on your ability to be generous with your money and possessions, doesn't it? Because actually, when you're locked up in fear, what goes on in here is, gosh, I better make sure that I have enough. I hope God doesn't ask me to do something too radical, because is he really big enough to provide for my needs? I better be stingy. I better hoard. I better hold stuff back. I better actually keep it all for myself, just in case I need it. That's what fear does. It causes us to live with a stingy, fearful mindset. And yet this is what Jesus said in Luke 12. He says, listen, don't set your heart on what you'll eat or drink. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. For the pagan world runs after such things, but your Father knows that you need them. Seek his kingdom. All these other things will be given to you as well. You know, it's interesting that people sometimes say that money talks. I wonder what your money is saying about you. Like, if someone was sitting with your pound sterling having a good old gossip about you, what would your money say about you? What would it say about the place of fear or faith in your life? Because to be honest, there is not really any better litmus test as to the place of fear than how you handle your finances. Money really does speak. Which is why, when it comes to having gift days like we've got in a couple of weeks' time, it's such a fantastic opportunity. Because tonight, I know we're all sitting here thinking, yes, I want to be free from my fear. Fantastic, we've got a gift day in 2 weeks' time. Here is your golden opportunity, folks. You are going to get what your heart's desire. Opportunity to walk free from fear. Because it starts in this area of how we handle our money. It really does. A guy walked into my office just a couple of weeks before I went to New Zealand last month. And asked to see me. And he came into my office. He said, Phil, I just wanted to come and encourage you and just say I love you and I love your family, and I just wanted to express my thanks and appreciation to you. And I was like, oh, thank you so much. That's so kind of you. And he said, in fact, God's been speaking to me that he wanted me to give you a gift for your family to use. And I was thinking, oh, that's nice. Maybe it's a chocolate bar or a gift token. And he said, actually, I feel God wants me to give you my iPad. And he pulled it out of his bag. He'd only had it about 3 months himself. And it was all packaged up, about 500 quid's worth of kit. He's like, God's been speaking to me about it for the last 3 months. I've been kind of putting it off, but I just can't say no anymore. And he said, I want you to have it to bless your whole family. He said, it's not just for you, it's for your whole family. Which they keep reminding me about. And I'm holding on to it. Now, what does that say about that particular man? It says to me, here's a guy whose money is speaking very loudly about where his trust is. His trust is not in his money, his possessions, or his treasures. Because actually, Jesus says, where your treasure is, there your heart is. And it says to me, this is a guy whose heart is on a journey of freedom from fear. Fear affects our ability to be generous. It also affects our ability to honor. You know, honor is a value where it means that we make space for people who are different than us. That's what honor does. But where fear is present in a culture, what you usually find is a high degree of conformity, where everybody looks like clone troopers from Star Wars because they all act and look and sound exactly the same. Usually that is an indication that you have a culture that's full of fear, where nobody has the boldness or courage to be a little bit different in case they get ostracized. I was listening to an interview a few years ago with a guy called Will Young, you know, the singer. And the interviewer was just asking him why he'd made the decision to move from England, his home, to Los Angeles. And Will Young said, to be honest, the main reason that I moved from England to America is that the cynicism and skepticism of British culture was so stifling to my ability to be creative. I had to get out into a completely different environment. And I thought that was an incredibly telling comment, actually, on British culture. That we are so quick to be cynical, skeptical, squeeze everyone into a box so we all look exactly the same as one another. But actually, when you start getting free from fear, you can start honoring people who look and sound very different than you do. Fear also affects our ability to be courageous, perhaps most obviously. It also affects our ability to be authentic and open with one another. What you tend to find is when you have the presence of fear in your life, whether it's like me, maybe a fear that other people won't accept you or reject you, what you tend to do is have relationships that are very, very shallow. Because subconsciously we think, if people really got to know the real me, they might not like me. They might not want to spend time with me. If they really got to know who I am, they would probably reject me. Therefore, it's easier just to relate on the surface, just to have nice small talk, never really to open up to the depths of who I am. That's what fear does. It locks you into shallow, brittle relationships rather than relationships of openness. Do you know, the truth is that people can't really love you until they get to know the real you. You can't love a mask. Again, how many of us have been in many Christian circles where it feels like we are presenting the nice Christian mask? Very hard to love that mask. Much easier to love a real person who's being open. And also, fear has a massive impact on our ability to accept people and principles that we don't necessarily understand. You know, what fear does is it often drives us to need to completely control our environment so it looks exactly how we are comfortable with. But how many of you know that God doesn't often work like that? God frequently works totally outside of your box of understanding. I mean, I remember an occasion where my children weren't sleeping very well. They were little, they were young. Sam particularly was having a series of nightmares. And no matter how much prayer and fasting we did, nothing changed. And so I'm like, God, please speak. Tell me what to do. And so this is what he said. He said, Phil, I want you to march around your neighborhood for the next 7 nights at 6 o'clock. And I want you to pray for breakthrough. And then the nightmares will stop. Now, how many of you know, if you want to completely control your environment in a way that you understand, that does not fit the bill. I'm like, okay, I'll give it a go. And so the next 7 nights at 6 o'clock, I would walk around our neighborhood after we'd eaten dinner and I would pray, and I would pray for breakthrough. I tell you what, after 7 days, all the nightmares stopped instantly. And they never came back. Now, do I understand that? No, not at all. And actually, when your heart is controlled by fear, it can make it very difficult for you to respond and say yes to God when he starts to whisper instructions to you that you don't necessarily understand in the moment. And so fear has a huge effect on our culture. So here is the real question. How can you and I move from fear to faith? How can we do that? Well, here are a few ideas. Number one, receive the Father's love for you. Receive the Father's love for you. 1 John 4:18 says this, there is no fear in love because perfect love drives out fear. Because fear has to do with punishment. The one who fears is not being made perfect in love. You see, it's true that faith is the opposite of fear, but faith is not actually the antidote to fear. The antidote to fear is love. Is love. You want to get free from fear? Here is your answer. You need to understand how deeply you're loved by God. Because suddenly when your heart starts to connect with how lavish, how extravagant, how excessive the love of the Father is for you, suddenly your fears seem a whole lot less plausible than they did before. When your life starts to get swallowed up by the magnificent love of Heavenly Father, suddenly your fears stop seeming quite so significant as they used to. Because suddenly your life starts to get defined as one who is radically loved by a God who sent his own son to die in your place. I tell you, you will not find that kind of love anywhere else on this planet. And until your heart is ruined for a revelation of that love, you will experience fear. But God's answer is to reveal to you his love. And actually, what this verse tells us is that every time you experience the presence of fear in your life, there is an invitation from the Father at the same time. Just come and receive a bit more of my love. Because you obviously haven't quite understood it fully enough yet. You know those moments where you just feel that terror inside. You feel that anxiety. Just remember, when that next happens, at the same time, there is an invitation from your Father. Just come and taste a bit more of my love. There's so much more for you to see. And Paul, when he's writing about the love of God, says that this is actually a work of the Holy Spirit. This is one of the main works of the Spirit of God, that he reveals the love of God. And when Paul's praying, he says, listen, I pray that you would know this love that surpasses knowledge. I love that prayer. So I pray you'd know something that's impossible to know. Pray you'd know this love that just surpasses knowledge. It's so massive. There's so much love for you to experience and understand. And when he's praying this prayer, the word know is the word gnosis, which means to know by personal, first-hand, intimate experience. In fact, it's the same word that Mary uses when the angel comes to her and says she's going to bear a son, even though she's a virgin. And she says, how will that be since I've never known a man? Literally, that's the same word that Paul is using. He say, I pray that you would know this love that surpasses knowledge. And it's the word used for personal, first-hand experience. Not the love of God up here, but the love of God in here. Let me ask you, have you had a revelation, an understanding of how much you're loved by the Father? Not just up here, but in here, in a way that frees you from your fears. We were praying with a friend of mine in New Zealand just a couple of weeks ago, and in this particular evening meeting we were encouraging people to pray out declarations about themselves that were true, to break lies over their life. And different people were praying out different things, like, you know, I'm a world changer, and, you know, I'm gonna change culture, and I'm gonna lead a new generation to Jesus and stuff like that. And I just said, listen, there are some of you, you're struggling to actually get any words out of your mouth because you're afraid that if you say them, they won't come true. So in fact, there's someone here and you've got three brothers, and the words that your three brothers spoke to you have locked you up in fear. And if that's you, we'd love to pray with you. Well, a guy came up at the end of the meeting and he said, that man is me. He said, I was in exactly that situation when you were asking people to pray. I couldn't say anything about myself because I was so afraid. And he said, I've got three brothers. And the words that my brothers spoke to me, and in fact, my father and my grandfather, have totally locked me up in fear. And we said, well, what is it? What is it that you felt that you couldn't say? He said, I felt that I couldn't say, I'm a good man, I'm a good husband, and I'm a good father. Because I'm so petrified that I will repeat the abuses and mistakes that I've seen in my own family. And he says, I just can't say it. Because I'm just so fearful that I'm going to turn into that same abusive man that my father was. And so we began to pray with this dear friend of mine, actually. And just began to pray that he would experience the love of the Father. Not just up here, but in here. Because scripture says, listen, he who fears has not yet been perfected in love. And he just stood there as we prayed for him, just tears rolling down his cheeks. We said, listen, why don't you try again? See if you can get those words out of your mouth. And it took him a little while, but eventually he said, I am a good man, and I'm a good father, and I'm a good husband. And I am not going to repeat the mistakes of my father. I mean, it was a powerful moment. I was just like hairs on the back of your neck kind of moment. And then the next day, he went kind of one stage better. He was leading worship the next day. And he said in front of everyone, listen, I just want to make a confession. I'm a good man. I'm a good husband. And I'm a good father. And I'm not going to repeat the mistakes of my father. And the whole church just went nuts, kind of cheering, yes, come on. And what was happening there is he is experiencing the love of the Father, this love that surpasses knowledge, because actually the antidote for your fear is to know how excessively you're loved by God. Here's my second tip for moving from fear to faith, is remember the spirit that you received. 2 Timothy 1:7, for God has not given us a spirit of timidity, but of power, love, and self-control. The word timidity there is a Greek word that literally means coward. Paul is writing to Timothy, his young understudy, and saying, listen, remember the spirit you received. You didn't receive the spirit of a coward. You received the spirit of love, power, and of self-control, which helps you, again, understand and put your fears in the right box. When you are afraid of stuff that you shouldn't be afraid of, fear isn't an illegal alien and imposter in your life. It is not what you got when you came to Jesus. It's not what you got. And I know for some of us, you think, well, this is just who I am. I've lived with these fears for so long. It's just part of my makeup. It's just part of how I'm wired. Wrong. It's not part of how you're wired. You got a complete rewire when you got grafted into Christ. He did a complete re-engineering job on the inside of your heart. And he planted you out of fear and he planted you into Christ. Which means now everything that is true of Christ is now true of you. You are a brand new creature. Which means, no, actually, fear is no longer part of your makeup. It may be part of your behavior still, but it's not part of your nature. And actually, increasingly, as you understand, the spirit I received when I got grafted into Christ was not fear, but was love and power, the same spirit that was on Jesus. It will help you walk free from your fears. Because you've got a box to put in. Every time you sense fear in your life, you can say, get down, fear. You are not part of my nature. I will not give in to you. And your voice is not the one I'm going to listen to. I'm going to listen to a voice much weightier than yours. Remember the spirit that you received. Chris Vallotton says this, if you really understood who you are and whose you are, anxiety would become an irrational concept. I love that. Number three, feed your faith. Feed your faith. Now, I've noticed this through the years, that the more I eat, the bigger I become. And again, in New Zealand recently, we were staying at one particular family's home where the lady was an incredibly good cook. And every morning we would come up for breakfast, she would say, what would you like for breakfast? Scrambled eggs, bacon, toast, sausages, you know, and she would just literally lay out a menagerie of food for us. And, you know, if you're a man, you never say no to bacon. I mean, just never do. It's one of those unwritten rules. You never say no to bacon. And so we had bacon and scrambled eggs, you know, just several mornings. And I noticed that I got larger as a result. And listen, it's the same principle spiritually. Whatever you choose to feed will grow. What you choose to ignore will not grow. And, you know, if you just imagine that your next door neighbor has an incredibly vicious, snarling dog that you hate. And his name is, I don't know, his name's Lucifer or something. You know, and he's always biting the postman and chasing you up the yard. And he's always making a racket and whining and screaming. And you're scared of that dog. Listen, here's something that you should discover. If you stop feeding that dog, it will die. Okay? Now, the same is true of your fears. If instead of focusing on your fears, you start feeding your faith, you will find that your fears begin to die. And it doesn't matter how snarly or vicious they are, if you stop feeding them, they will stop living. Someone said this, that fear and faith cannot keep house together because when one enters, the other departs. And the way to starve your fears is to feed your faith. And you can do that in all sorts of different ways. You know, for me, it's making sure that I keep good company. You want to feed your faith? Be around people that speak faith to you. You know, I'm just, you know, so many people in this room are men and women of faith. Mike Green, I love Mike Green because he's a man of faith. And when I'm around Mike Green, I feel more full of faith than I did before. Because he's like, yeah, come on, let's do something for God. And it just pours out of him. Now, keep company with men like Mike Green. Because actually, it feeds your faith and it starves your fears. You know, read things that feed your faith. Don't, you know, here's my little personal tip. Don't spend endless hours reading bad news in newspapers. Let me tell you what that does. It feeds your fears. You know, it feeds your fears. Oh, gosh, the economy is really going downhill. What's going to happen? North Korea are building nuclear weapons. Oh, no. There's a new disease out. There's no vaccine. Ah! More and more people are getting depression. Ah! Now, what does it do when you feed yourself bad news? What it does is it feeds that nasty, vicious dog that actually you're trying to kill off. Why don't you instead try and find some good news to feed yourself on? You know, read about revival. Pick out your Bible and read the truth about who God is and what he's like. Feed your faith. Choose what you will feed and it will grow. And then lastly, take courage and take someone else with you. J. Haggai said this, that you and I should do something that is doomed to failure unless God is in it. And my second tip to that would be take someone else with you to do it. Because if you're anything like me, we often need a courage buddy. Someone who stands alongside us and says, I know you're scared to do this, but I'm going to do it with you. And together we can do it. And actually, if we want to break free from fear, one of the best things to do is to do something that really scares you, but to have someone else to help you. Have someone else by your side who can push you into that zone that is not at all about your comfort, but is about believing God. You know, I was in, again, a meeting recently in New Zealand where someone asked me a very direct question in a meeting. I knew what the answer was. I knew what I had to say, but it was a difficult thing to say. Now, the issue was I had two friends either side of me, and I knew that they knew what I thought. And I knew if I didn't say it, afterwards they would be like, so Phil, why didn't you say that thing that I knew you thought, but you didn't say? And so actually that gave me courage to say, this is what I think. And actually it was a key moment of breakthrough. Never would have had the courage if they'd not been alongside me. You know, same when our family started to experiment with going out treasure hunting and praying for people on the streets. In Newcastle, one of the first times we did this, I went out with my son. I think he was probably 8 or 9 years old at the time. And we felt God spoke to us about going to a particular train station and then we would meet a man on crutches who had blonde hair. So he seemed much less fearful than I was, to be honest. And so off we went with our little map and clues and we waited by this train station. And to be honest, I was hoping that nobody would turn up so that I wouldn't have to pray for anyone. You ever been on evangelism like that? I have frequently been on evangelism. You know, I hope no one turns up so I don't have to do anything. Well, that's just fear, isn't it? And so we were waiting. I was hoping no one would turn up. And then lo and behold, near the end of our time, this guy with crutches and blonde hair hobbles up the steps from the train station. Inside, I'm thinking, oh no. But Sam is like, Dad, there he is. There he is, Dad. Let's go and get him. And I'm being all fearful and cowardly and saying, well, his hair's not really blonde. It's kind of mousy. It's mousy brown. And maybe someone else is going to come along that fits a better description. And da, 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 da. And Sam's like, no, come on, Dad. Let's go and get him. Let's go and pray. And this guy by now was halfway down the street because I'd waited so long. So Sam's like, come on, Dad. And so he pulls me down the street and we walk towards this guy and have the opportunity to pray with him and talk to him about Jesus. And you know, again, I never would have done that if I didn't have a 9-year-old courage buddy next to me. That is the honest to God truth. But the truth is, if you want to conquer your fears this year, what will help you is if you have a friend that you can be honest with and say, listen, I'm really scared of doing this, but I know that I should. Please, will you help me? Please, will you stand with me this year? And let's press through fear together. So, in conclusion, I felt the other day that God was saying that he was wanting to come and quadruple our courage as a church. And I feel like we are going to start to see a culture shift in this area for us as a church community in terms of radical courage that says no to fear, that says yes to faith.